From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Autosport National Podcast. Well, welcome back to another weekly edition of our national podcast, and I'm going to introduce my my guest immediately because this is his idea, so I'm going to let him outline the idea of what we're going to be talking about today. So welcome, Stephen Lickridge, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. Raring to go for another one of these Autosport National podcasts, and it's another edition where we're picking out some elements of national motorsport, and this time the topic is things that we would like to see return or brought back to national motorsports. We obviously hear a lot about what's happening at the moment, and this is our chance to just have a look back at what things used to be like. We often hear the phrase things were better back then. We're going to pick out some elements that we think would be good if they were indeed brought back today. Not everything is great, as always was as great as it perhaps seems when you reflect on it, but there were plenty of fantastic initiatives, be it series, be it races, be it events, be it concepts, or even just attitudes among the club racing community, that'd be good if they were brought back into the sport again today.
Yeah, I must admit, I did have to double check your message a couple of times for this one, just because I kept going down the road of what I'd like to see and it kind of going down the fantasy route.
No,
these have got to be things that have existed at some point in some way, shape or form. Otherwise, you could just, I mean,
it could be anything. You'd be there all,
exactly. It needs a little bit of structure. So I had to rein myself in. let's get into it. Do you want to go first? As it's your idea, Stephen, you can outline the very first one that you think things that you'd like to see back.
Well, this one is a bit of an odd one because it is something that does still exist, but it'd be good to get it back to its former glory, and that is the Formula Ford Festival at Grands Hatch. It's a historic event. It's been taking place for over 50 years now, and the sad reality is that Formula Ford in this country is not the starting point for all of the future single-seater aspiring drivers that it once was. Obviously, back in the day, the festival was a huge event at the end of the season with over 200 entries, 8 heats, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, all of the top drivers from around the country, around Europe, even further afield, flocking to it. And it's, although it's still a really special event now, there's still some really good close racing at the front, some quality drivers there. It just doesn't have the numbers that it used to. And wouldn't it be wonderful if it was back to, okay, 200 is very unrealistic, but even back to 100 or so would be good, because at the moment, the last couple of years, it's had 66 and 54. And with the 54, it was meaning everyone was pretty much progressing through to the semi-final, which, when this is a knockout event, that's not really what it should all be about, sadly. And its fortunes did improve a little bit when the 50th anniversary was marked. That showed that there was still a groundswell of support there. And it would be wonderful if that could return, those bigger fields could return, and it could be a really special event once more.
I mean, this might be outside of the remit of your outline for this podcast, but I mean, I guess one question would be how would you do that? I mean, where the reason it was so successful in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s, wasn't it, was because it was the first rung on the ladder. Like, it was the place to start your career for a long, long time. Most Formula One drivers started or went through Formula Ford. And so it kind of had an almost World Cup of junior motorsport status for the 70s and 80s, which it is, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but it is a club event, isn't it, as opposed to what you regard as a national career-starting event. So I don't know if you could ever recapture that, because I can't see Formula Ford being the first rung on the ladder. You're almost more likely to get that if you were to make Formula 4, which is obviously the FIA's first rung on the ladder. If you could have an F4 World Cup, festival, whatever, that might get your yeah, that might start to get that same sort of feel. I mean, Formula BMW had a world finals for a little while. That was, again, that was a similar sort of idea, but it never got to the, obviously never got to the enormous size of Formula Ford, because Formula Ford was around the world everywhere and still is in many countries. So I don't know if there's a category or a way of really making it happen again. But I mean, in this universe that we've created for this podcast, where you can just wave your magic wand and make it happen, then I agree that it would be a great thing to see back.
Yeah, I think the key point is that there's obviously there are more than 66 Formula Fords racing in the country, especially if you add in Ireland and not too distant places like Brands Hatch. It's not too far for European competitors to travel as well. So I think it is possible to bring those numbers up a bit, but as you say, it's not easy in this day and age when the Formula Ford world has moved on. That's the reality of it.
Why do you think the Walter Hayes Trophy at Silverstone, which is normally basically a week after, isn't it? Why does that tend to get a bigger field or entry, do you think, than the festival these days?
I wonder if part of the thinking there is it's that event is much more nowadays is much more focused on the Formula Fords, whereas the festival, there's still a lot of other races that take place, and at times in recent years it's felt more like a BRICC meeting with a lot of Formula Ford there rather than a festival meeting with a few other BRICC series in action.
Slightly different focus. Sort
of slipped away a little bit in sense of that. But you're right, it has been the case for a long time now that the Walter Hayes has attracted the bigger numbers, whether it's the Silverstone venue, all sorts of different factors that can play into that. And I'm sure that's something else we'll be exploring later in the year as we build up towards these events, how they're shaping up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So a bigger Formula Ford festival is your opening one. I don't think many people would find that controversial. I do think they might find my choice controversial. I'm not sure. I kept thinking, do I really mean it? And I think, yes, I do. I actually did used to enjoy going there. So I would bring back Rockingham.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, which a lot of people don't like going there. It's in the middle of not the most picturesque. Well, actually, it depends which way you used to go in. There was the old village on the other side that was really picturesque when you came in. But if you went the main way, then it was a bit sort of industrially estatey and not very attractive. But I don't really care too much about that. The reason I sort of liked it was because actually, I thought the view was fantastic. I remember covering British GT, British Formula 3, Formula Ford there. And you could see everything, and some of the corners on the infield were actually pretty good. There were some high speed ones that were challenging, but there were also a couple of hairpins to help with overtaking. British Touring Cars used to have a pretty good race there, so I know it was much maligned. It's not a sort of a sexy venue and all the rest of it, but I thought I quite liked Rockingham, and also it did give us the option. I know it fell into disrepair and didn't get used as much, but they did have the full oval. Yeah, it gave us an opportunity for oval racing in this country. It's not particularly my bag, but I like the idea in a country where we've got so much variety of motorsport, we should have a super speedway as well. I'm not saying it's my favourite circuit, but I think, you outlined what would you like to bring back about national motorsport. So Rockingham, I thought it was a shame that Rockingham went. So, you must have covered races at Rockingham, Steve.
Yeah, Rockingham was the very first meeting I covered for Autosport was a club meeting at Rockingham. So it's always had a sort of special place in my heart in that respect. And funnily enough, it was indeed on my list as well.
Was it? Oh, brilliant.
We did not discuss these beforehand, just to try and keep ourselves on our toes. And actually, Rockingham was on my list as well. So I just think that, as you say, it's a love-hate venue. People have got a big opinion on it. But as you said, it's a great place to view. Was a great place to view from in terms of actually seeing what's going on. And I think club motorsport as a whole has missed Rockingham. And I say that in the sense that it's put increased pressure on dates on other venues, particularly, for example, ones like Donington Park, where they're now absolutely chock full. They can't get any more meetings at that sort of circuit without stretching into December or January or something. So it by losing that central venue that most of the big clubs went to, it's really put pressure on dates on other circuits as well. So not only have you lost the unique challenge that Rockingham posed with the oval, the banking and what have you, it's also had a knock-on impact in terms of club motorsport more generally. If we had that another venue, another central venue that other clubs could go to, it would help relieve a little bit of the congestion around some of the other circuits that we've got in the UK.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's also in a, it's a fairly sensible location as well. You know, it's in that kind of triangle with sort of Silverstone, Santa Pod, Donington Park's not a million miles away. I thought it was a nice day. And I got some, there were some great highlights. We had some couple of brilliant British touring car races there. I remember British GTs and the old panels blatting around. That was good. It is, of course, I feel contractually obliged to mention that it was also the scene of Nick Tandy's solo British F3 win in the Magal. We can mention him this week because obviously he's just won the Sebring 12 Hours on the basis that he now appears to win all the classics all the time. So put your money on Nick Tandy for the Le Mans 24 Hours this year. I thought you might give me some pushback there. So, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we open it to the listeners as well as to, first of all, what would you like to bring back, but also which circuit would you like to bring back? There are others, of course, that have, well, many others that have fallen by the wayside over the years. Rockingham's the most recent, of course. What's the email address, Stephen, for
the best one to get in touch? Contacts with is national@motorsport.com. So any suggestions on related to this podcast or any other podcast you would like to hear, or even any suggestions for features in Motorsport magazine or online as well, please do get in contact.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, no, please do. We've had some really interesting emails, actually, since we started doing the weekly national newsletter and national podcast. So thank you very much for writing and those that have done. And please encourage other listeners to do so as well. Well, I feel like I've kind of stolen one of your entries there. So I'm going to throw it back to you again, Stephen, to put in your next suggestion.
Well, let's see if this one appears on your list as
well. I'll be amazed if we've got any other overlaps.
So the next one on my list, and this is heading down to the sort of fanciful fantasy world a little bit, is back to a time where the current F1 stars and champions of the day would take part in national events alongside their Formula One commitments. Now, obviously, this used to happen regularly in the 50s, 60s sort of era. And obviously, it's incredibly unlikely to happen now, purely from a logistical point of view, in that there's 24 F1 races where there was not back in those days. And there were opportunities for drivers to compete in other series alongside Formula One. But wouldn't it be wonderful if you had like Lewis Hamilton rocking up in a Ferrari in a British GT round, or George Russell back doing 2CV racing like he did once in 2014 to get a license signature? It would really help boost the profile of club racing and open it up to a whole wider audience, just having these people involved. And I think the randomness of the Russell 2CV story is quite cool, but we don't see that as much now because there's more championships that take place during the winter around the world that drivers can get those signatures, can get those license upgrades that they need. So we don't see the random teenagers popping up in a club series to quite the same extent as we used to.
I really like that idea. I think that's fantastic. I mean, actually, you touched upon quite an important point there, I think, is how motorsport has developed in the last 50, 60 odd years, in that back in the day, you wouldn't have had a difference between club and national. Like, what does that mean? Because club racing was just grassroots racing. That's where you started. You know, Jonathan Palmer started in a Marcos, didn't he? And that was much more recent, of course. Mm-hmm. And before that, you know, Jim Clark raced Jaguar D type and all that's okay. You might regard that as quite an exotic club car, but the events he was at was club racing, and they even had non-championship F1 races at the bigger sort of national events. So the gap, I think, between what you might regard as sort of amateur, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but sort of hobbyist racing and the start of professional national motorsport, that it was one and the same thing, whereas I just don't think it is now. In fact, we almost touched on that with Formula Ford. You won't start your next F1 stars are not starting in Formula Ford and club racing. They are starting in the national rung of British Formula 4, generally, for example. So, yeah, it's a change that's, I think, probably inevitable, given the increasing diversity and professionalism of motorsport. But it would be great indeed to have some of these cameo, you know, these little guest appearances. Yeah, get back to the days where a driver would do three or four. Well, actually, of course, with some of the historic races, like Nigel Greensill, do three, four, five races in a weekend. But yeah, it'd be nice to have. I suppose the closest thing we get to what you're suggesting really is things like the Goodwood Revival and the Silverstone Festival, where we do get some sort of current, and not really F1 stars, because A, they're too busy, and B, I suspect the teams wouldn't really like to risk their drivers in. I mean, I remember there was quite a lot of talk in the mid-1980s of Formula One drivers maybe not being allowed to drive in Group C, obviously after some quite serious accidents, you know, Stefan Bellof, Vingegaard, for example. So that, you know, it was a thing on F1 team managers' minds 40-odd years ago, so I can't imagine they'd be keen. And as you say, the schedules now, if they're not in a car, they're in a media session, and if not, they're in the gym. So, or they're trying to relax somewhere away from everyone, which you can't really blame them for either. So, very much like that idea.
When you're on a sim somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, ban them from esports. So, if you want to go racing, you can go in a real car somewhere else. And actually, Red Bull have got quite a cool collection of stuff. I mean, it's Matchitz's son, I think, has just bought Bernie's collection of cars in the Bernie Ecclestone. So, he'd have plenty of historic cars to choose from that he could dip into. I don't know how many in the race prep, but knowing Bernie, I suspect they're all tip top. So, anyway, yes. So I, it is perhaps borderline fantasy there, Stephen, but I'm liking it. I don't know whether it's really any more fantasy than my suggestion, because I think things have moved on. So when I was growing up and going to club match races, one of the things I look forward to the most were the AMOC Intermark races, which for a little while, a few years back, were sort of revived as, they called it Super GT, not the Japanese professional series, but a club series. And I just loved them because they encouraged one-off GT big bangers. So I'm thinking Jerry Marshall in the Marsh Plant Aston Martin V8, David Ellis in his own Aston Martin a bit before that, Richard Chamberlain's Porsche 935 that I know he still, you know, rebuilds every time it catches fire and takes it out, and he usually frightens more modern kit. And I just loved Malcolm Hamilton Jaguar E-Type, an enormous V12 engine thing with a huge wing on the back, which I believe I'm not sure if it has been rebuilt after its last crash. I'm sure it still exists. I think most of these cars do exist somewhere. And I just thought they were great. They were big, usually the fastest cars there. I know when Anthony Reid raced the Marsh Plant V8 a few years back, he could beat GT3 cars. So they were proper pieces of kit. But of course, I think GT3 is probably the reason that these cars don't really have their own series, because, you know, these guys had to spend an awful lot of time, money and effort developing these cars. I mean, David Ellis, I think, started developing his first V8 in the late 70s into the early 80s. By the time I saw it as a kid, it was barely recognizable as an Aston Martin V8, but it was a fantastic piece of kit. But a lot of money and time spent on developing these cars, and obviously they're all bespoke, so they have individual bits they're probably having to make themselves or get specialists to do, whereas now you just go and buy a GT3 car, don't you? And you can, if you've got a GT3 car, depending on how old it is, you can go and do a current championship like British GT, or you can do GT Cup, or you can do an all-comers thing. Yeah, you can use your GT3 car in so many more places, and if something goes wrong, you go to Porsche, Ferrari, Lamborghini, whoever, and they just fix it for you. So I can completely understand that. And we're not knocking GT3. GT3 is the most successful category, I would suggest, in motorsport this century. But I do think it's a little bit of a shame that we no longer have these kind of one or two off specials that used to, yeah, and they really were thunderous bolides, to steal a Marcus Piezum. So they were one of the things that got me into motorsport. So yeah, I'd like to see them come back.
I think it's very difficult to argue against that. There's anything that's a genuine one-off that you literally cannot see anywhere else is such an appeal, just to see those cars in action. And as you say, GT3 has just raised the professionalism so much. And it's given a platform that you can race every weekend if you wanted to. There would be a GT3 race, whereas these cars, you have to be careful on the eligibility and sure that getting any sort of number of them together in one place, A, for the reasons of them being self-developed and breaking down in bits and pieces, but B, to actually get them to all fit to the same rules isn't straightforward either. If you've got people developing different cars to different, a blank canvas in some respects. So I think it's a sad reality of the way modern motorsport's going, in that things are increasingly either, if not single make, then a clear structured form. You know, for example, TCR is the equivalent in the sort of tintop world, as well as GT3. So we just don't see as many of these one-off creations, which is such a shame, because they're just such incredible cars to view.
Yeah, absolutely. They're just they're one of the appeals of sort of club racing, really. I mean, especially with international motorsport being very much more manufacturer or sort of high end team based, or cars that have been produced in batches. I just like them. Although to sort of back up your argument, I remember when Super GT brought it back. Oh, I guess it must have probably been 10, 15 years ago now. I remember going to Thruxton. And there were four cars in the Super GT race, and I think two of them failed during the race as well. And I'd basically gone to the event for that race, and it was a bit because I really love the idea of what it could be as opposed to what it turned out to be. So yeah, I actually did speak to David Ellis as well, because he built another Aston Martin later on, which was also bright yellow, which was quite successful. But he did still have his original V8 in the corner of the garage somewhere under a cover. And then he was like, I'll keep toying with the idea of rebuilding it. So, but he obviously never has. So, if you're listening, David, or any of his family, give him a nudge, because we'd like to, even if it's to come out as a the sort of car that you'd welcome, I think you should take that to, you know, Goodwood Fest of the Speed or somewhere, you know, maybe a demo at a Motorsports and Saloon event or something, just to see it out there again. But anyway, there we go. That's my, so Big Banger one-off GTs, I suppose, is my entry for that one. So go on then, Stephen. What's your next one?
Well, those were my three main ones, but with Rockingham as well. So those were the three ones that I picked out.
Oh yeah, I stole one of yours, didn't I? I'm sorry about that. Well, I'll mention my final one, which is kind of, I mention it partly because I just think it's outrageously cool. But also because it ties in with someone who's recently died. We've got their obituary up on autosport.com. Mark Sims did that, and that was Colin Crabb, who probably most famous for bringing Ronnie Peterson into Formula One with a privateer March 701. But actually, for a lot of the people I imagine listening to this and who have been interested in historic motorsport, he sort of saved and brought into circulation again some pretty exotic racing cars over the years. He used to be able to get them out of random places, find them. In fact, I think he wrote a book that was The Thrill of the Chase. And I don't think he was just talking about racing them. I think he was talking about finding these cars. Fascinating life and job that he did for historic motor racing. Generally, a lot of the cars out there, the really exotic stuff. But one of the cars he did bring out, which made it onto the Autosport cover on the 29th of July 1971, was one of the W125 Mercedes pre-war Grand Prix cars, which is one of those cars. So there are a few. I've been very fortunate to see lots of fantastic racing cars from history over the years at Goodwood and Silverstone and various other places. But I've never seen a W125 driven in anger. Mercedes did bring one or two of them out occasionally for sort of demos. But he actually got his and raced it. And the picture is of him in the wet. Bearing in mind that this is an amateur racer with a car with over 600 brake horsepower when it was running to its full potential, the W125, 1937 Grand Prix car. Now, he actually finished second that day in the Hawthorne Trophy to Neil Corner in an ERA R4D, which we do still see racing regularly. It's one of the most successful pre-war racing cars in the world, I would suggest now. And Neil was like his son Nigel, a few years later, they were top historic drivers. But yeah, I just would love to see, even if it's just once, somebody you know, good, competent, quick, in a historic race with a W125 Mercedes. That's, I know that sounds mad, but for a little while there was something that special in VSCC events in the 1970s. So fair play to Colin Crabb for saving it and bringing it out and having the bravery to race one of those things. So yeah, we need another Colin Crabb to come along and race one, but it'd be far too valuable, of course.
That's one of the things you do often hear, isn't it? That you don't have as many characters as you used to have that are prepared to just do the almost insane things, crazy things that no one else is prepared to do. And everything has allegedly become a bit more sort of sanitized now, but you do still find those characters in club motorsport. Just they're probably fewer and further between. Perhaps their outlandish ideas aren't as outlandish in the sort of grand scheme of things compared to like the Crabb example.
Well, I think that the finances are probably the thing again. You know, there was a period, of course, where an old racing car was an old racing car, and you know, someone like Crabb, who did have some money behind him, but it was sort of doable. But when you think that Mercedes sold one of its two Uhlenhaut 300SLR coupes for $100-something million, and the Le Mans winning Aston Martin DBR1 sold to a private collector for over $20 million, you know, are you really going to go? You're looking at a very small number of people that have got that amount of money and are then prepared to risk those cars in a race situation. So I think probably the closest we'd get, is either a demonstration from one of, yeah, you can imagine the Mercedes wheeling out and letting George Russell have a go or something like that, for a demo event, a little bit like Fernando Alonso used to, Ferrari used to bring cars out, didn't they? For some of their drivers, still do sometimes. I think Charles Leclerc's driven one of the older Ferraris as well. You're probably looking at a very small number of people that could do that. Or the other one is replicas, like we've seen with the sort of the short-nosed Ferrari. But anyway, I think we've just about sort of trod the line of fantasy, but there was a precedent of it happened in the past. So I think we've stuck to your brief, Steve. Are you feeling happy with those?
I think we've towed the line perfectly there, because that's the idea of these sort of podcast lists. Editions is just to have a bit of fun, look back at some of the things that have happened and what we would like to see. And I think all of these suggestions, would imagine if they're all at one race meeting, all of these incredible cars and people and machinery, that really would be something. But
the George Russell in a W125 at Rockingham is where we've ended up there. Yeah, I think
that's the conclusion then. So that's really what we'd like to return.
Yeah, I'm not sure how club or national we've managed to end up there, like one of the great Grand Prix cars with the current F1 driver, but we've tried. But it makes the point again, doesn't it? The gap between the two used to be much smaller, I think. There we go. Well, I mean, let us know what you think. If you've got any suggestions, I'm sure there are lots and lots of things. People have been going to national racing, club racing for many years, and we know that you're out there because some of you have emailed us, and sometimes I'll see you and I'm stood out at a cold Loughfield or Paddock Hill Bend or wherever it is that you might be. Let us know. What have we forgotten? What have you not mentioned? Are our ideas crazy? Are they the sort of things that you miss? Just let us know. So thank you once again for listening. Thank you to Stephen Licorice for his idea. I'm going to look forward to seeing what we can come up with next for one of our crazy lists. We'll be back soon with another All Sport podcast.